Beta and Torin had already arrived. They rose in their back seats and beckoned to Randu as he passed. Randu smiled gently. You are here after all. How did you work it? Magnifico was our politician, grinned Torin. Indber insists upon his visisonar composition based on the time vault, with himself, no doubt, as hero. Magnifico refused to attend without us, and there was no arguing him out of it. Ebling Mies is with us, or was. He's wandering about somewhere. Then, with a sudden access of anxious gravity, Why, what's wrong, Uncle? You don't look well. Randu nodded. I suppose not. We're in for bad times, Torin. When the mule is disposed of, our turn will come, I'm afraid. A straight, solemn figure in white approached and greeted them with a stiff bow. Beta's dark eyes smiled as she held out her hand. Captain Pritchard, are you on space duty, then? The captain took the hand and bowed lower. Nothing like it. Dr. Mies, I understand, has been instrumental in bringing me here, but it's only temporary. Back to home guard tomorrow. What time is it? It was 12:03. Magnifico was the picture of misery and heart-sick depression, his body curled up in his eternal effort at self-effacement. His long nose was pinched at the nostrils, and his large, down-slanted eyes darted uneasily about. He clutched at Beta's hand, and when she bent down, he whispered, Do you suppose, my lady, that all these great ones were in the audience? Perhaps when I played the visisonar? Everyone, I'm sure, Beta assured him, and shook him gently. And I'm sure they all think you're the most wonderful player in the galaxy, and that your concert was the greatest ever seen. So you just straighten yourself and sit correctly. We must have dignity. He smiled feebly at her mock frown and unfolded his long-boned limbs slowly. It was noon, and the glass cubicle was no longer empty. It was doubtful that anyone had witnessed the appearance. It was a clean break. One moment not there, and the next moment there. In the cubicle was a figure in a wheelchair, old and shrunken, from whose wrinkled face bright eyes shone, and whose voice, as it turned out, was the livest thing about him. A book lay face downward in his lap, and the voice came softly. I am Harry Seldon. He spoke through a silence, thunderous in its intensity. I am Harry Seldon. I do not know if anyone is here at all by mere sense perception, but that is unimportant. I have few fears as yet of a breakdown in the plan. For the first 3 centuries, the percentage probability of non-deviation is 94.2. He paused to smile and then said genially, By the way, if any of you are standing, you may sit. If any would like to smoke, please do. I am not here in the flesh. I require no ceremony. Let us take up the problem of the moment, then. For the first time the Foundation has been faced, or perhaps is in the last stages of facing, civil war. Till now, the attacks from without have been adequately beaten off, and inevitably so, according to the strict laws of psychohistory. The attack at present is that of a 2 undisciplined outer group of the Foundation against the 2 authoritarian central government. The procedure was necessary, the result obvious. The dignity of the high-born audience was beginning to break. Inber was half out of his chair. Beta leaned forward with troubled eyes. What was the great Seldon talking about? She had missed a few of the words. That the compromise worked out is necessary in 2 respects. The revolt of the independent traders introduces an element of new uncertainty in a government perhaps grown overconfident. The element of striving is restored. Although beaten, a healthy increase of democracy There were raised voices now. Whispers had ascended the scale of loudness, and the edge of panic was in them. Beta said in Torin's ear, "Why doesn't he talk about the mule? The traitors never revolted." Torin shrugged his shoulders. The seated figure spoke cheerfully across and through the increasing disorganization. A new and firmer coalition government was the necessary and beneficial outcome of the logical civil war forced upon the Foundation. And now only the remnants of the old empire stand in the way of further expansion. And in them, for the next few years at any rate, is no problem. Of course, I cannot reveal the nature of the next problem. In the complete uproar, Selden's lips moved soundlessly. Ebling Mies was next to Randu, face ruddy. He was shouting, "Selden is off his rocker! He's got the wrong crisis! Were your traitors ever planning civil war?" Randu said thinly, "We planned one, yes. We called it off in the face of the mule." "And the mule is an added feature, unprepared for in Selden's psycho-history. Now what's happened?" In sudden, frozen silence, Beta found the cubicle once again empty. The nuclear glow of the walls was dead, the soft current of conditioned air absent. Somewhere the sound of a shrill siren was rising and falling in the scale, and Randu formed the words with his lips, "Space raid!" And Ebling Mies held his wristwatch to his ears and shouted suddenly, "Stopped by the galaxy! Is there a watch in the room that is going?" His voice was a roar. 20 wrists went to 20 ears, and in far less than 20 seconds it was quite certain that none were. "Then," said Mies with a grim and horrible finality, "something has stopped all nuclear power in the time vault. And the mule is attacking." Inber's wail rose high above the noise. "Take your seats. The mule is 50 parsecs distant." "He was," shouted back Mies, "a week ago. Right now, Terminus is being bombarded." Beta felt a deep depression settle softly upon her. She felt its folds tighten close and thick until her breath forced its way only with pain past her tightened throat. The outer noise of a gathering crowd was evident. The doors were thrown open and a harried figure entered and spoke rapidly to Inber, who had rushed to him. "Excellence," he whispered, "not a vehicle is running in the city. Not a communication line to the outside is open. The 10th Fleet is reported defeated and the mule's ships are outside the atmosphere. The general staff..." Inber crumpled and was a collapsed figure of impotence upon the floor. In all that hall, not a voice was raised now. Even the growing crowd without was fearful but silent, and the horror of cold panic hovered dangerously. Inber was raised. Wine was held to his lips. His lips moved before his eyes opened, and the word they formed was, "Surrender." Beta found herself near to crying. Not for sorrow or humiliation, but simply and plainly out of a vast, frightened despair. Ebling Mies plucked at her sleeve. "Come, young lady." She was pulled out of her chair, bodily,